everybody. I am not here today, but I am thrilled to introduce our guest speaker, none other than Jeff McMillan. Now, many of you will remember Jeff McMillan. If you do not, he worked here for a really long time as youth minister for a lot of that tenure, and then for campus minister for a long time as well. Jeff is the one responsible for introducing all of us to Camp Pettyjohn. So anybody who's had good experiences down there can thank Jeff. Jeff was also extremely instrumental in the building of the summit. But my favorite thing about Jeff is he has been one of the greatest friends I have ever had. And you are in for a treat today. So join me in welcoming Jeff McMillan.
I just need to stand here for 1 second, if I could, and look at all your lovely faces. I'm so glad to be back with you. I was trying not to be nostalgic, but give me 20 seconds, if I could. I started talking to my wife in the old auditorium, and she somehow saw something in me 30-some-odd years ago. Y'all helped us raise our daughters here who are still following the Lord closely. And we have 2 new grandbabies. I'll be happy to not show you pictures today out of respect for you. But if you want to come see, just look at my phone after church. And then we were able to baptize those same girls in this place right here. And so my heart is full of gratitude for all the love and relationships that you have given to my family over the years. If I asked you to describe your personality in 2 words, I know what you're immediately thinking is like, I can't do that. I'm too complicated, Jeff. There's too much going on with me. I'm all these things, and I just need you to do it. 2 words, I'll even let you have a phrase if you want a phrase. But in the interest of waking up this morning, I would like you to try out your 2-word description of yourself on the person next to you, especially somebody that you know, and see if they agree with that. I'm going to give you 15 seconds, 2 words, what do you got? I know you need more time to think about it. Who's this guy think he is? I've had such a head start on you for this, and all I can come up with for me, I'm serious, I've thought about this, quirky and kind. That's all I got for you. I don't know. I want to go further, right? Does it feel like you've oversimplified yourself anytime you try to do that? But what do you think Jesus would say if I had the chance to ask him the same question? I'm picturing myself saying, Lord, look, I know that you made me. I'm the creature, you're the creator. But honestly, if you could just give me you in 2 words, what would it be? And the truth is, we know that Jesus did describe himself in 2 simple ways. Matthew 11:29, we just had it on the screen. I am gentle and humble in heart. And I'm going to come back to that. But I want to tell you that the Spirit has been guiding me in a gentle way toward a growing gentleness in my life. And any time that I stand in front of a group, I always know that I'm going to be sharing what I'm learning, what the Lord is teaching me, and today that fits again. And if this is for you, that's great, but this is especially for me today. A couple of years ago, I read a deeply formative book called Gentle and Lowly. It was written by Dane Ortlund. And that book, wow, it really formed me a lot. A lot of deep theology, a lot of scripture, but super readable. Several times as I would sit down to read the book, I'd have to set it down. The tears were too much to continue. Like, literally couldn't read the words on the page. The humility, the gentleness of Christ on full display in this book. It was Charles Spurgeon himself, that famous 19th century preacher, who noted that in the 89 chapters of the 4 Gospels of the Bible, it's only in Matthew chapter 11 where Jesus tells us who he is at his core. Only once does Jesus describe his own heart, Matthew 11:28. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon me, or upon you, and learn from me, for I am gentle, humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Jesus pulls open the curtain of his heart and tells us who he is. Not that he is holy, not that he is king, not that he is perfect, not that he is powerful, not that he is the creator and sustainer of the universe, for he is all of those things, but it's not what he chose when he wanted to describe his heart. It was a heart that Jesus actually said was more easily seen by children than by adults. Now, a word about heart in ancient text, it doesn't mean the emotional center of a person like it does in today's words. It means the very core, the very essence of a person. That's why you could read in like Proverbs chapter 4 when it says, guard your heart above all else. It determines the course of your life. Because the heart is the essence of our life. It drives all we think, all that we do. And of course, Jesus is more than just those few words that he mentions about himself in Matthew 11. But at his core, at his very essence, gentle, humble. And what kind of God would be known for gentleness and humility? The one with all the power, the one with all the might, with all the glory, and yet gentle and humble. And I suspect you and I are similar in that we want to imitate Jesus, but boy, it does not come naturally, does it? So what is the Bible saying about gentleness? Let's look at this together. There are lots of times that word gentleness is mentioned in the Bible. There are many different Hebrew and Greek words that talk about it, and they get ultimately translated into that word gentle. But only on three occasions in the entire Bible is the word praise translated precisely the same as it is in Matthew 11, 29, as gentle. So what is it saying? The first thing is this. The first instance of that exact same word. Gentleness has high value and reward in the kingdom of heaven. Because we read about it in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, verse 5. He says, blessed are the meek, that same word translated gentle, for they will inherit the earth. Gentle people don't focus on possessions, acclaim, or accomplishments, which makes it fascinating to me then that the Lord would give them such a large inheritance as the earth. That's the first time. The second time we see that exact same word is in Matthew 21. And what we learn from it is that gentleness tends to make extraordinary people seem ordinary or even difficult to identify. They're kind of like camouflage in their greatness. In Matthew 25, Jesus rides into Jerusalem just days before he's crucified, and you may remember, he's greeted initially as the king. He didn't arrive in a royal chariot, did he? He didn't have a motorcade. He didn't have a large white horse. He came into Jerusalem riding on what? A donkey. See, your king comes to you, gentle, gentle, and riding on a donkey. Have you paid attention to a donkey lately? I know you haven't. They look like if animals watched cartoons, donkeys would be the main cartoon that they watched. They are shorter. I think we have a picture of them. They are shorter, chubbier, slower than horses. And a grown man, first of all, and then also the hee-haw. They don't even get a good sound, right? So donkeys in general are just a bit of a mess. I think there's another picture I wanted to show you here, if you'd skip ahead. I think. Maybe not. Well, I was going to show you a picture of me on my tiny little scooter. If you know me well, it's about this big. And a grown man on a scooter looks almost as silly as a grown man might riding on a little 3-foot-high donkey. So the third thing, though, is lastly, gentleness influences others in powerful ways. It influences people in powerful ways. So we see that it makes extraordinary people seem ordinary. We see that it has high value in the kingdom. But then in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 4, it's advice for women on how they live behind the scenes in their homes He says in verse 4, your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. And I think if we were just to read those three scriptures alone, we'd see something about gentleness right away. It has lasting value. It does not jump off the page when you see it, and it changes things for the better. And you do remember that other word that Jesus used to describe himself, humble or lowly. We're not going to dive in that today, but I'll just mention that Jesus wasn't only speaking of the virtue of humility, he was also speaking about the humiliation of finding oneself in the pits of life. The King of Heaven, fully accessible to all people today because of humility. And how does one get access to that King? It's simple. Open your heart and let him love you. Your mistakes, your emptiness, your burdens, your broken dreams, your uncertainties, your feeling unfulfilled, you not knowing what the next chapter in your life is, your boredom, your frustration. Humility accepts that not only are these like not part of the problem, they are literally what calls you to the heart of Christ, that what qualifies you to have access to God. And so if someone were to ask you to tell you who Jesus is, and you got to give them that classic elevator pitch, like you just have a few seconds to help to tell people who Jesus is, you would say, well, Jesus is gentle, Jesus is humble. And if that's all that you said, you would be using the same words that Christ used himself. So back to gentleness. It's long been a goal of communities to pursue gentleness. In the 12th century in England, men who were of a certain status were told that if you had a little more education, you were expected to use good manners, and you were to be known for good conduct around your town. And if you did all of these things well, you would become known as a gentleman. And going further back, the Bible describes gentleness in multiple different ways, but one of them is that it is a synonym with a soft nighttime rain. We've had a lot of nighttime rains this summer, haven't we? You wake up in the middle of the night, and that sound of the rain on the roof or on your windows, isn't it fantastic? Does anyone in your family use one of those sound machines so that they can sleep, a white noise machine? I think I may have a sample of this sound right here. Maybe I don't. There it is. Y'all would like it if I just stopped talking right now and just let this go. Did you know that this sound, gentle rain, is the top sound of all white noise sounds that people pick? And it is literally synonymous with the idea of gentleness. Other words used to describe it, this trait, are wholesome, soothing, meek, patient, whispering, doing what is right. And on a very human level, we know gentleness when we see it in somebody else. But honestly, I personally typically only want to be a little bit gentle. It definitely feels like a trait that can be taken too far, or that it doesn't really take into account how the world actually works. But anytime that I'm too harsh, when I'm impatient, snarky, edgy, sneaking in that extra unhelpful comment, later I'm usually convicted that I've chosen harsh over gentle, that I took it a little bit too far. But on the other hand, when I am gentle, I rarely regret it. And why is that? Because I'm reflecting the heart of Christ in my actions, which is exactly what it means to have an embodied faith, when our outward nature reflects the inner working of the Spirit in our lives. Well, you may not be convinced yet that gentleness is your vibe. Let me be clear that gentleness does not come from a place of timidity or fear or insecurity or just being soft. Gentleness comes from strength under control, strength given us to us by the Lord, who supplies confidence and mercy. And mercy, by the way, can only be shown by those who are strong. Gentleness is the trait of somebody who's strong and doesn't need to prove it. When we're gentle, there isn't the urge to push or provoke or force, because our strength and hope are in the Lord, and that shapes our interactions, our attitudes, even our online presence. And you think about when you are the most forceful or the most anti-gentle. When that happens, you're typically worried that something is about to not work out in your favor. You're afraid you're not going to get your share, that your problem isn't going to be solved, that somebody's going to cut you in the front of the line. You're going to feel that you're going to be left out, or that someone has been mean to you. And it can get extra ugly when I'm not being gentle and I double down and tell all y'all that what I did was actually appropriate for the moment. And of course, we'd never call it harsh. We have a whole set of words that are more palatable, that I put my foot down, that I'm standing firm, that I always throw in the phrase at the end, "Well, bless their hearts." It's that urge to maintain what I have without giving up ground, without risking being too gentle and ultimately being taken advantage of. And the reality is this: that gentleness is the willingness to give away power and rights and your share, and that it's not demanding to be repaid or noticed. It's not insisting that all of y'all understand me. In the ancient Greek culture, Aristotle himself said that gentleness was a prized virtue. He described it as being mild-mannered and, get this, predictable in your moods, that you're friendly, that you never mistreat others. He said, actually, the person who wants to stand up for their rights is very different than the person who displays this trait of gentleness. And that's exactly, though, what marks a Christ follower. Look at James chapter 3, verse 17 with me. "But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It's also peace-loving. It's gentle at all times, willing to yield to others. It's full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism. It's always sincere at all times." It's this ever-present trait of gentleness that's ultimately and perfectly found in God. He's patient, not wanting anyone to die in their sins, sharing his son to make new life possible, overflowing with grace and mercy. And y'all, as I was getting this message ready, I began to read on and on in the Bible, studying more, and I'm telling you the truth, this word and this concept, it's everywhere. It's all through the Bible. It's at the beginning and the ends of New Testament letters. It's instructions on virtually every type of relationship you read about in the Bible, even in the Old Testament. After God had shown his awesome power defeating the pagan prophets on the mountain in that incredible showdown with Elijah, the very next chapter, this is God's voice, 1 Kings 19. "But the Lord said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? I've zealously served the Lord God Almighty. Go out and stand before me on the mountain," the Lord told him. And as Elijah stood there, the Lord passed by, and a mighty windstorm hit the mountain. Such a terrible blast that the rocks were torn loose, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire. The Lord was not in the fire. After the fire was the sound of a gentle whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and he went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And a voice said, what are you doing here, Elijah? This God of unmatched power, he communicates in whispers? And all I can do is shake my head and say, of course he does. The ultimate in power, but gentle to his core. I want to tell you about a phone call I received earlier this month from my former youth minister when I was a kid. His name's John Maples, and some of you may know John and his wife, Lynette. He was just calling in to check on me and say happy birthday to me. He's one of those really lovely guys that anytime that you talk to him, you're not sure if he's talking to you or talking to God, because he's talking to you and then all of a sudden he's praying and he never tells you, well, let's bow our heads and pray. He's just He's that kind of a guy. And so he was talking to me the other day and telling me just about life and seeing how things were going with me. And for context about John and Lynette, when I was a boy, I had a really hard time getting my behavior to match the expectations that were being placed on my behavior. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? And so we were ornery, we were silly, we were curious, we talked way too much when we should have been listening, we were sometimes irreverent, and we definitely made it challenging for those who were investing in us as volunteers and ministers. We were kids, and it was a different time. And I hold no hard feelings, but I will tell you this, at the bottom of my heart, for the first half of my life, I felt I was generally a disappointment to my church, and that I had tried to be good for God, and I just wasn't going to be very good at that. And so I carried that around with me. And to this day, when people who've known me for a long time begin stories about me from my childhood with something like, well, I'll never forget the time that you and your brother, and then they fill in the blank. I'm like, oh, it's like triggering for me. It's tough to hear. Or Jeff, you may not remember this, and I think it's okay to tell this story now, but, and then they go ahead and tell me the story. So that's all in my mind. A couple weeks ago, I'm in mid-conversation. John all of a sudden begins to pray a blessing unannounced over me during our conversation. And these are his exact words. I know that because I wrote them down the moment we hung up the phone. And he said this to me, or he said this to the Lord in the prayer. Lord, I remember Jeff and Greg coming to sit with us in church when they were young. And we were mighty glad to have them. And I was undone to hear that I wasn't a mess, that I wasn't somebody's problem or a youth group hot potato, that I was loved. Not because I was good, but because John takes it personally to imitate the heart of Christ as gentle. And those were the gentlest words to me, and they sank into my soul. All these years later, they sank in like medicine. And I wonder if you've made it a goal to speak gentle words over somebody that could use it. Not deserve the gentle words, but use them. And by someone, I mean everyone. Because we can all use gentleness. And still there are times when the idea of gentleness concerns me. I don't want to be a doormat. I don't want you taking advantage of me. I don't want to be a sellout. And they're all valid concerns. Concerns that can challenge us to look honestly and deeply at why we focus on certain attributes of the nature of Jesus. And why at times we find ourselves super focused on these parts of Jesus and avoiding these other parts. I'm coming to understand that my preferences of how I understand Jesus cannot define him. He defines himself. And so, y'all, I'm learning to take him at his word, and his word is, I'm gentle and I'm humble. And the more that we can acknowledge Christ in that way, the more that we can see him that way, we can see his humble and gentle heart. For it was through his humble nature that he forever defeated sin in me and you and all humanity as we come to him. It was the cross itself that was the very image of humiliation and shame. And yet, it put the enemy to shame. And in deep, deep gentleness, it was our fallenness that drew Jesus out of a life in heaven to a life on earth that ended on that cross. He was not repulsed by us, he was drawn to us. And by the way, not just the finished version of me, but the current messy version. Ortland says it like this in his book. He said it's impossible for the affectionate heart of Christ to be over-celebrated, made too much, exaggerated. Gentleness isn't something to be used when nothing else works. It's not a tactic. It's the heart of Christ followers. Ephesians 4, be completely humble and gentle. Philippians 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. It's such clarity that we're invited to be 100% completely, obviously gentle and invited to be that way with all people. All gentle, all the time. I don't know about you, that's so much growth area for me. And I don't want to go any further without reading a scripture that many of us know and love and even have memorized. Paul has 9 attributes of people that are filled with the Holy Spirit, who are living in step with the Spirit, and he calls them the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5, verse 22. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. There's no law against any of those things. If we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. And that is the key, isn't it? To be in sync with the Spirit. And by the way, Spirit-filled people aren't picking the fruits of the Spirit like a buffet. We're eligible to have all 9 at all times. That's the goal for all of us. So, as I finish today, I want to share with you how we can embody gentleness in our lives. Because gentleness is the heart of Christ everywhere, always. The first place is this. We have to know that gentleness is a gift. It's a gift. Psalm 18 says, you have given me the shield of your salvation, and your right hand supported me, and your gentleness made me great. Isn't it true that he's been gentle with us every step of the way? And it's essential that our lives reflect that kind of gratitude for that never-ending virtue that he gives us. The second thing is this, gentleness helps when we're sharing the good news. 1 Peter 3:15, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect. As a Christ follower, we're able to be gentle with people who are outside of Christianity because we know that the God that we serve is slow to anger. He doesn't want anyone to spend eternity apart from him. I say it like this, God loves everyone more than I love anyone. And knowing that this is true fills me with hope and the desire to connect. Also, gentleness is evident within the church. It's to be modeled by elders. 1 Timothy 3, verse 3 says elders are not to be violent, but gentle. And I've had the privilege of praying with and meeting with elders in this church for, 40 years of my life. And they love to, as Stephen said earlier, pray for you. There's a spirit of gentleness there. But guess what? It's not just the elders. Ephesians 4, verse 2, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient. Bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Bearing with one another. I guess Paul's like you and me in that he didn't really love being around everybody in the churches that he was ministering to. But we stay together. Unity takes work. Unity takes gentleness. Gentleness, by the way, solves so many church conflicts. It finds ways to love through disagreements in order to stay one in the Spirit. It doesn't use power to make somebody bend to your will. It chooses a humble path. And by the way, gentleness is often marked by fewer words, not more. The next thing is that we're gentle with our neighbors. Titus 3, verse 2. They must not slander anyone. They must avoid quarreling. Instead, they should be gentle and show true humility to everyone. Part of gentleness then is letting go of the need to be impressive. It's letting go of the story that tops the story that I just heard. It's celebrating others. It's looking beyond shortcomings. Really what it is, it's all of my personal favorite things about Jesus paid forward to the next person. We're also to be gentle in the home. Ephesians 6 verse 4 said, fathers, don't frustrate your children with no-win scenarios. Take them by the hand, lead them in the way of the master. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives. These words are all translated the same. gentle in the home. We're to be gentle when working. 1 Thessalonians 4:11, make it your goal to live a quiet life, minding your own business, working with your hands, just as we instructed you before. Then people who are not believers will respect the way that you live, and you won't need to depend on others. So gentle when working. How about gentle with enemies? 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24, and the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, and working with your hand, and able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. And this is a good time to say to you that our presence online, especially in social media, with people who see things differently than we do, is not an exemption from the call to gentleness. It's a good rule of thumb when you're about to post something and you aren't positive you should put it out there, to don't. So, then next thing is this, gentleness and conflict. Proverbs 15:1 says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. It's extra powerful when we find ourselves able to stay gentle in the midst of a disagreement. You ever had that feeling where it's going south and you feel like your blood pressure rising, your neck and your face are turning red? Well, there's a book that was written a few years ago called Crucial Conversations, and they found that most conflicts usually begin to go off the rails in 120 seconds or less. So you think about the last really bad interaction that you had. It probably didn't happen in like an hour's time. It was probably like, man, that just got out of hand in a hurry. Off the rails in 2 minutes or less. And he found that the way to get beyond that, in all studies everywhere, was to be curious, to ask questions of the person with whom you're having a disagreement. It tends to ease the intensity of things. And that is exactly the fruit of gentleness in conflicts. Disarming volatile situations and building bridges rather than choosing strong words and big emotions to end the conflict in the moment. It takes work, though. And the last thing I want to share with you is this. We're called to be gentle with ourselves. Philippians 4, verse 4 says, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice, let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. I save this for last because I struggle with it the most, being gentle with myself. I know I'm not alone in this battle. I think some of us have spiritualized our self-loathing. My mentor has asked me more than once if I would ever speak to another person the way that I at times speak internally to myself, and my answer to her every time is absolutely not. That would be ridiculous. I would never talk to somebody like that. And you know what she says? Then stop talking that way to yourself. So when I'm harsh with me, this is my goal. Be joyful that God is mine and I am God's. And secondly, this, trust that God stays close to me. And thirdly is this, to trade my private anxiety for sharing my struggles with God in real time. And as we close, I wonder who the Spirit is inviting you to be gentle toward. Not as a strategy, not as a tactic, but because they could use a gentle presence. Is it family? Is it a friend? Is it a neighbor? Is it someone who could use your forgiveness? I didn't say deserve your forgiveness. And Jesus is gentle. He died for us before we even knew that we needed a sacrifice. He justified us before we even knew we needed that. In his gentleness, he gave us his entire heart. Maybe you need to let the Lord be gentle with you today. And if God is pursuing you to go towards gentleness with other people, we're going to sing another song. And there's going to be shepherds in the back atriums that would pray over you. And please go back there and let them pray with you. And if you want to be baptized, come on down this morning and we'll help you with that as well while we stand, while we sing.